And welcome to the AHGB Beef and Lamb podcast. In the last podcast of 2018, Sarah Pick talks to Alex Corbishley from Edinburgh University about a study that investigated the effect of dry cow nutrition on colostrum quality and passive transfer to the calf.
Hi, my name is Sarah Pick and I work for AHGB Beef and Lamb as a knowledge exchange manager. Today I'm at a strategic farm meeting in Gloucestershire with Alex Corbishley from the University of Edinburgh, and we're going to have a chat about the study that investigated the effect of dry cow nutrition on colostrum quality and passive transfer to the calf. So Alex, thank you for talking to me today. So why is nutrition so important, particularly for dry suckler cows?
Well, the main thing we're trying to achieve with dry cow nutrition is to ensure that she's in the best state for calving, and also therefore when she's going through to service later on in the season. So to do that, we really need to think about nutrition in two stages. The first is getting her ready for calving, and that's much earlier on in the late autumn and the winter time, where we're trying to get that cow into the right body condition. So that may need to be tailored based on her body condition when she's coming in. So thin and fat cows will need different management. But then in the run up to calving, it's absolutely essential that that cow's getting what she needs so that she can calve unaided. You've got a good vigorous calf and she's producing the colostrum and the milk that she needs. So it's essential for us to think about both nutrition at some way off calving to get her ready, and then giving her what she needs at that time of calving.
Brilliant. And what makes a good dry cow ration?
So there's lots of different rations, and we've looked at quite a few, as you know, this year. And really what we want to do is make sure that far off from calving, we're getting the cow right. So if she's a fatter cow, that will be a different ration. That will be a bulky, low energy ration.
And what body condition score would you say a fat cow is?
So we're talking about cows that are 3.5 and over.
Okay.
And for those cows, we want to give them a ration that's bulky but low in energy.
Yeah.
They don't need a lot of protein, but they do need some. If we just give them straw, that won't be enough. But when they're coming up to calving, we need to make sure that they're getting the right amount of energy and protein. And we're typically talking around 90 to 100 megajoules for a cow at the point of calving. And we're talking around 9% as a minimum crude protein for a cow. Heifers will need more, around 11%.
Right.
And we find that actually quite a lot of cow rations probably need to be more in the 10 to 11% range.
Oh, okay, okay. And I know you've said as well today that it isn't just what you're feeding them, it's how you're feeding them as well. What do you recommend there?
So absolutely. So we've looked at a lot of rations that look very sensible on paper, and they should give the cows what they need. But when we ask the cows what they think, they're not quite so happy on that ration. So really, this is about intakes and thinking about how we offer feed to suckler cows. And of course, when you've got a calf inside taking up room, you're not quite so keen to eat, particularly in that last 2 or 3 weeks. And you know, we need to think in these herds, do we have enough access to feed? Is there too much competition?
Yeah.
Is it palatable? Has the food been sat there a month? Or is it quite fresh? So it's keeping the intakes where we want them to be.
And how much will a suckler cow actually eat?
So generally we're talking around 12 to 14 kilos, depending on the size of the suckler cow. We've seen rations this year under 10, and we really are starting to get worried that the dry matters are too low at that point.
Too low, yeah. Brilliant. So in your study that looked at the cow nutrition and then the effect of that on colostrum, what are your recommendations for that, and of some of the rations that you've seen, which ones are the better ones and which ones are the worst ones?
Well, the really striking thing is that we've seen some great simple rations that have worked just fine. So we've had cows on grass and cows on haylage or hay, and they've had absolutely perfect results.
Yeah.
So it can be done with a very, very simple ration. The things that haven't worked very well is where we've got unrealistic expectations. So we're trying to get cows to eat 10 kilos of straw and not really giving them any protein or additional energy. And then we've seen some results on outdoor crops. So turnips and kale, for example, we've seen some results on turnips, which were pretty bad, but others on kale, which were great.
Right.
So again, it comes back to that intakes of how much of it they're actually eating.
And that they actually can eat. So I know often farmers are quite concerned about getting large calves at birth, and obviously that associated that with difficult calvings, and have tried to reduce feed intake in that last month before calving. Would you recommend that, or is that something that's going to cause a lot of problems further down the line?
Yeah, so we don't recommend that, in short, And I think the real key point is the best way to manage difficult calvings is through genetics and selecting easy calving bulls. That's the direct calving ease on REBVs. Trying to stunt calves by underfeeding the cow isn't really a sustainable future for us. And what we need to do is make sure that cow at the point of calving has what she needs. So there's certainly a case for restricting cows during the winter time, during the late autumn, particularly if they're over-conditioned. That's fine. We've been doing that a long time and it works. But in that last month before calving, she needs what she needs. And if we underfeed her, we will actually create more calving difficulties. And that's because we've got a cow that's not getting what she needs to do her basic functions. Yeah. You know, she's short of energy and she's not going to be fit enough and strong enough to push that calf out.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And will that also then impact on her then coming back in bullying and getting her in calf again?
Absolutely. So, you know, what that cow calves in will have an impact on how likely she is to get pregnant, and through a number of ways. So if she has trouble calving and needs help, then that could potentially knock her fertility in the future. But more importantly, if she's the wrong body condition or she's been too short of energy and she continues to be short of energy through to service, then those conception rates will be lower as well. So really what we're aiming for is a cow that about a month off calving is in a pretty stable state all the way through to getting pregnant again.
And what body condition score do you recommend?
So 2.5 to 3 is what we're aiming for.
Right, okay. And I know you mentioned at calving, the follicles developing, is that right then for the next pregnancy? So that's why it's quite important that...
Absolutely. So, you know, those eggs which are going to be getting pregnant later on in the summer, they actually start developing a few weeks and months earlier.
Right.
So if you've got a cow that's in serious negative energy balance, so she's in trouble, those eggs won't necessarily be coming through for another couple of months, and that may be at the time she's about to be served. So, absolutely.
So it's not only impacting on your calving success, but then it's also impacting on your breeding success a couple of months down the line as well. So I know as part of your study you looked at minerals as well. What supplementary minerals do dry cows need, and what did your study highlight?
So I think the first thing is some farms have known deficiencies, and on those farms they do need to supplement for those. And generally there's a good understanding within families or businesses as to what problems there have been. But the real striking thing from our study, and we saw a lot of mineral tickets, was incorrect minerals being fed to close-up dry cows. So we saw things like finishing minerals being fed to dry cows. Now, finishing minerals are generally low in magnesium and high in calcium.
Right.
That's completely inappropriate for a close-up dry cow. Really what we want for our close-up dry cow is a specific dry cow mineral that is higher in magnesium and lower in calcium. Now, they don't need to be on a dairy cow mineral. They don't need to be on a very restricted calcium mineral. But we saw a lot of cows with low magnesium in our study. And therefore, it's clear that what a lot of herds are doing at the moment is not good enough for magnesium.
Okay. And what is the best way to supplement with magnesium?
So we looked at that and we're still sort of picking that apart in detail. But obviously, there's lots of different approaches people take. And what we noticed was a lot of variability in a herd or in a group. And we think potentially when they're being supplemented through water or through mineral buckets, we're getting uneven uptake. So we get some cows that are always at the bucket.
Yeah.
They're getting the magnesium they need. And then you've got the cows that never go to the bucket. And they're the ones that you're at risk of having a slow calving or a cow go down with staggers or going down in the pens before she calves. So really the most reliable way, if you've got them inside and you're rationing them, is to feed a powdered mineral, either top dressed or mixed into the ration. Or potentially bolusing cattle as well is another option. But being able to ensure that everyone gets the mineral is an important consideration.
And finally, what are your top tips for ensuring that calves get the quality and the quantity of colostrum that they need to get successful immunity?
So you've absolutely hit the first two nails on the head, the quality.
Answered the question for you.
And the quantity. And the third one, of course, is quickly.
Yeah.
And what we found in our study was that actually, folk were picking up calves in trouble quite well.
Okay.
So we had calves that had been helped, but their results were not good.
Right.
And what we think is happening is we're just not giving them enough help quickly enough. So if we're supplementing calves, we should be giving them cow's colostrum. There's not an awful lot of antibodies in the replacers. So if all we've got is a powdered colostrum product, then use it. But by far our preference is to give them cow's colostrum, and they need 3 litres of that within 2 hours of birth.
Right.
Now, in terms of picking out at-risk calves, there's been some interesting work in Canada which would really suggest that anything you've helped calve,
okay,
or anything that's got a suck reflex that's weak at sort of 10 minutes old, these ones that are very high risk of not getting enough colostrum, and those would be the ones to target.
Yeah.
Generally, the study, though, as mentioned, a lot of people are very good at finding the calves that need the help,
yes,
but they're not giving the 3 litres of cow's colostrum in 2 hours.
Yeah. And can you just explain why it is so important to get it into them within the 2 hour period?
Absolutely. So the gut is relatively open when they're first born, and those antibodies from the colostrum can come from the gut into the bloodstream. As they get older, that gut closes. And critically, the moment they start feeding, the gut closes faster. So if that calf gets up and sucks off a cow, let's say that calved 3 or 4 days ago,
yeah,
gets some milk in that doesn't have much antibodies, and then you come along with colostrum, then it's not really going to absorb those antibodies as well.
Right, okay. And one, just the final question, and then I'll let you go. If you're freezing colostrum, what is the best way to do that? And then what's the best way to thaw that then?
Yeah, so the best way to freeze it is in sort of a narrow container, so something like a Ziploc bag.
Yeah.
The reason for that is that it defrosts faster.
If
you put it in a milk bottle, it'll take a long time to defrost, and at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, you don't want to be waiting around. So chill it quickly and freeze it quickly. Don't leave it standing around.
Yeah.
You want to try and do 2 to 3 litres because that's sort of what you're looking for when you want to defrost it. And you're taking that from cows that have got extra. You can test the quality of it. So there are things called Brix refractometers, and there's lots of information from the dairy side as to how to use those. So you can test the quality.
And they're relatively inexpensive, aren't they?
£15 from the internet. So
everyone
can have one. And then when you defrost it, make sure you do it in sort of warm water, so sort of 60 degrees out of a hot water tap, not boiling water. And the problem with microwaving is if you blast it in the microwave, you destroy the antibodies.
So definitely don't microwave it.
So, you know, defrost it in warm water, and you can make your life easier by storing it in sort of flatter packs so that they defrost faster.
Lovely. And I know you said today as well, make sure you put the ear tag number of the cow that you've collected it from on the packet.
I think, you know, it's good practice for yourself. So put a tag number, put a date on it. If it's then 3 years old, you know, you can sling it out and replace it with some new. If you've got an ear tag and that cow goes down with yonis, you know that you really ideally don't want to use that. If you have to use it, put it on a male that's going to end up being a steer.
Yeah, lovely. Well, thank you ever so much for that. It was really interesting talking to you.
For more information, check out the BRP manual, Feeding Suckler Cows and Calves for Better Returns. Thanks for listening.